Every Nat Theo lesson comes with a free coloring page, so you can color as you listen. Download this lesson's coloring page at the link in our show notes and explore every lesson further in the Nat Theo Club or with our Bible and Nature unit studies. Enjoy science, the Bible, experiments, arts and crafts, nature journaling, outdoor activities, recipes, geography, video teachings, and more in the Nat Theo Club or unit studies. Find it all at nattheo.com/club.
Hello world, wake me up to another good morning, time to go.
Are you ready to explore God's wild and wonderful world? Welcome to the Nat Theo Podcast. I'm your host, Erin Lynham. I'm a certified master naturalist, Bible teacher, and author, and I am so excited to dive into God's written word, the Bible, and His created world with you. This week, we are marveling at God's designs in the moon. Yesterday, we learned how God engineered the moon just right for its important jobs. And today, we are joined by a special guest, Levi Lusco, who's going to share with us some out-of-this-world moon facts and how God's designs in the moon inspired him to write two books about the moon, one for adults and one for kids. Before we bring on Levi Lusco, let's thank our sponsor who helped make this episode possible, Masterbooks. As I was researching for this space series, I went back again and again to two books by Masterbooks. God's Design for Heaven and Earth is excellent for 3rd to 8th graders and us adults. Explore the universe, planet Earth, and weather and water systems. We even had the author on Nat Theo. Listen to that conversation on episode 124. I also love Wonders of Creation, Design in a Fallen World. This book beautifully showcases evidence for God throughout our world and the universe. I highly recommend these books for every family's library. If you're curious about space and want to learn the truth from a biblical worldview, you will love these books and every book and resource from Masterbooks. Find them at masterbooks.com and links to these specific books in our show notes. Let's learn a little bit about today's guest. Levi Lusco is the founder and lead pastor of Fresh Life Church. He is a best-selling author, podcast host, husband, and father of five, and he travels the world speaking about Jesus. Levi is the author of several books, including children's books and devotionals. He and his wife, Jenny, co-host their podcast, Hey, It's the Luscos. Levi and Jenny have one son, Lennox, and 4 daughters, Olivia, Daisy, Clover, and Lenya, who is in heaven. All right, let's welcome on Levi and learn some things about the moon that I think will surprise you. I know they surprised me. Levi, thank you so much for joining us on Nat Theo. Welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
I was so excited. A few years ago, I discovered your book, The Last Supper on the Moon, and I love studying space, love the story of space exploration, and even so much more, love the gospel. And so I was thrilled to see how you bring together the gospel and the moon, and then after that, to find that you have a children's book, Marvel at the Moon, that does the exact same thing. So you are the perfect guest to have on this week as we are looking at God's design in the moon and in outer space. So let's jump in. When did you first become fascinated by the moon? Was there a moment when you just stepped outside and looked up and you were like, wow?
You know, it kind of slowly kind of crept up on me. People jokingly refer to a midlife crisis like, oh, I bought a Corvette or, you know, started golfing a lot. my like obsession with the moon was like low key part of my kind of midlife crisis. I got really interested in astronomy. I got a telescope and just started, you know, some people start taking pictures of birds when they get a little older, right? Some mm-hmm. people start, you know, smoking meats a lot, you know, so I went more kind of the heavens. And one night I was having, I couldn't sleep, and I went out on my deck and I was looking up at the moon, and it hit me. And I don't know why I had never thought of this before, but there's only ever been one moon that we've ever had in the Earth's history. It's not like you get a new moon every couple of years, you know, which means, and this may be obvious to everyone listening, but that means it's the same moon that Abraham looked up to in the Bible, the same moon that Esther, you know, if she had a bad dream and went outside, that's the same moon that Jesus was praying in the Garden of Gethsemane while the full moon hung in the sky. The Passover was a lunar holiday, so it would have always been a full moon. So when I was looking up at that moon, it calmed and comforted me to think about King David saying, "When I consider your heavens, the work of your hands, the sun, the moon, and the stars, what is man that you are mindful of him?" He was looking at the same moon I was. And all of his problems that seemed so big, well, they came and went, and he's with God now. And my problems are huge today in my eyes, but guess what? They're not big for God. He's got big fingers, right? And so for whatever reason, that ignited a little bit of a fascination with me with space that had always been there. I had taken my family to Kennedy Space Center and toured it in Florida. And then, you know, from that point on, I started to get pretty nerdy about it. And it became like a side obsession to research the Apollo era program for me.
That's so fun. And I think that's powerful because we often think about, you know, here on NatTheo, we try to encourage kids and all of our listeners. There's so much of God's creation that we can get curious about. And that starts when we're little, but it's fun to hear about it starting older in life and later in life. And I know, like you talked about bird watching, and that's something that me and my husband and our kids got into several years ago. But for me, like, it was later in life. It's just fun to see, like, God can ignite that curiosity within us, no matter how old we are.
Yeah. And the more I learned, the more I got, and I never thought I was going to write a book or anything. That came way later. I just began to really just have my mind blown. I think it's really good to blow your mind, you know, and there's mm-hmm. lots of things you can do that with. Looking at birds, I love birds, by the way. I don't obsess over them, but I enjoy them. Loons specifically are like my favorite. Yeah. My son and I were mowing the lawn last night, and we kept hearing a loon cry, and it sounded like a coyote.
And you have them, like, there in Montana? You have loons?
Yeah, we have loons. In one day, I remember I saw a bald eagle, I heard a loon, I saw a heron, yeah. and then also wild turkeys. And it was that was beside just the normal birds, you know. But the space stuff really started to get me, because I'm like, man, people went there. We flew to the moon. And then here's what got me, Aaron. This is what blew my mind. My friend told me about Buzz Aldrin taking communion. And I was on the same deck when I had kind of had that bad dream when the moon comforted me. I was out there and we were on my deck, and my buddy goes, "You know, we took communion on the moon." I go, "What do you mean we took communion?" He's like, "Well, when Buzz Aldrin and Neil Armstrong went to the moon, Buzz brought communion elements." And I go, "No, he did not. Why would I not have heard about this?" Mm-hmm. And I looked it up, and he was right. And I was like, what? That means that the first thing ever eaten on the moon was communion. And that put me down a rabbit hole that ended up with the Last Supper on the moon. And then because of that, marvel at the moon as well, because it blew my mind.
I love hearing that story, because it was the title of the Last Supper on the moon that caught my attention. And then right as I started reading, you share that story. And the same thing, I was just amazed, because I had never heard that. And obviously, like, communion is so special and so powerful. Our family usually observes communion once a week together as a family, and it's like the sweetest time. And so to hear that that was what happened on the moon before he set foot off of the ship, that's just amazing.
And I got to confirm, I did talk to, this isn't in the book because it happened later on, mm-hmm. I did get to talk to Buzz Aldrin on the phone and confirm. Wow. That the communion happened before they ate their rations, because they did have meals they ate. And I was like, I need to know before this book releases, am I wrong? You know, and he confirmed with me that they ate the communion first. So that was the first thing. Same thing that Christopher Columbus did. They took communion when he got to the New World, and that was how he got the idea. his idea was, because he saw themselves as being like a modern day Christopher Columbus, and before the first step on the moon took place, he wanted to honor the moment with communion, and he got it from his church, and he read from John 15 as well as from the book of Psalms. He had a little card, and I have a photo of it in Last Supper on the Moon, that he actually brought the verse and read it. They didn't put it on the broadcast. This is interesting. They broadcasted everything except for the communion and the scriptures because they had a bad experience during Apollo 8 when at Christmas time we went to Apollo, because Apollo 11 was the big one. Apollo 13 was the one that went wrong. Apollo 17 was the last one. There were supposed to be two more, but people started to lose interest, which, by the way, I'm so happy space is popular again because of Artemis and Project Hail Mary. People are getting back into space travel. But the Apollo 8 mission, they did a big, long radio broadcast, and they read the entirety of Genesis chapter 1. God said,
I remember reading that in your book.
And NASA got sued by a very famous atheist named Madeline Murray O'Hare. She sued NASA because she said it was a separation of church and state issue. They shouldn't have been reading the Bible on a government broadcast. Wow. Now, if you look into history, separation of church and state was never there so that the church couldn't have an impact on culture or on government. It was always there so that the government couldn't meddle with the church. So whenever people say that, that's not actually historically accurate. They've always had prayers and chapel services and Congress, and there's always been a spiritual element to our faith going back to the founding fathers. But it went all the way to the Supreme Court, and they lost. The atheist claimed that they shouldn't have been able to read the Bible. This was a personal choice of the astronauts to read scripture. But the flight commander for Apollo 11, remembering the embroiled controversy the last time Bible got read on the radio, told the astronauts, hey, they told Buzz, you can bring the Bible, you can bring communion, we're just not going to do it on the official program, which is a tragedy to me because that would have been so powerful for everyone to know. Yeah. And I think it's one of the reasons a lot of us didn't know it had happened.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, wow. Fascinating. That was one thing I loved about reading your books, is there's just so much like behind the scenes that I never knew. That's just, you're like, that's amazing. Talking about amazing, what is one moon fact? Because you have researched this in depth. What is one moon fact that still amazes you every time that you think about it?
The backside of the moon is always hidden. That's interesting. There's something called asynchronous rotation, which is where something can rotate and spin, but at the same time keep a secret. So even though the moon spins and orbits the Earth, the way it spins and the way it orbits, it never shows the backside. So when you see the full moon, every time you see the full moon, you're seeing the same side of the moon. It never lets us see its backside. And that's why when Artemis recently flew behind it, they were broadcasting never before taken pictures of the dark side of the moon. And Apollo 8 was the first time that in 1968 we ever even got to see back there. So for all of human history, it was a secret what the backside of the moon looks like. And so every time you see it, you can remember there's a secret back there. We haven't seen it until, you know, astronauts went there.
Incredible. Yeah, we always think about like how amazing it was the astronauts first walked on the moon, and that is incredible, but then also amazing that they were the first ones to actually see that other side of the moon.
There's also a fun nerdy fact that we by Apollo 16 and 17, we were not just going to walk, we actually brought vehicles, those moon buggies, lunar rovers. And they had to be assembled. So they would bring them and they would kind of assemble them like a Lego project on the moon. And we would drive because it would allow us to go further. But the last lunar rover, and they both got left there. So right now, just think about it. It's like a junkyard. There's just cars sitting on the moon right now.
And that is so funny to think about.
It's true. And they threw out their trash, including all the human waste. So there's a lot of weird stuff on the moon, and a flag, which has probably been bleached white by the UV radiation from the sun. So our American flag is probably completely white right now. But the last time a rover was left there, the astronaut who drove it opened up a Bible and left it on the cockpit. So there's an open Bible sitting on the dashboard of a car on the moon right now.
Wow. Do you know what page or what passage it's open to?
That's a good question. I don't know that.
You need to call that astronaut. You said you talked with Buzz. You need to call that astronaut.
I do. He said the reason why was, he said, if anyone ever, extraterrestrial life or whoever ever comes here, he wants them to find the Bible. That's what he said.
I love that. And I love that there's no wind. So it's not like blowing the pages back and forth. Like, it's just still and sitting there and powerful and waiting. Wow. Well, in Marvel at the Moon, you shared a quote from astronaut John Glenn that after returning from space, he told reporters, quote, "To look out at this kind of creation and not believe in God is to me impossible. It just strengthens my faith." So Levi, how has learning about God's creation and specifically space and the moon, how has it strengthened your own faith?
Without a doubt, I'm with John Glenn. When I watch the sun rise, when I see the stars come out, when I two different times or three different times in my life have gotten to see the aurora borealis, the northern lights. When I see this, I don't go, I'm so awesome. I go, man, I'm a tiny speck and God is so big. And a God like that with glory on display, that he knows my name, that he loves me, that he wants to, that he'll listen to my prayer, his ear is open to my cry, that he knows how many hairs are on my head, that just makes me grateful for him, wanting to run to him, and wanting to live for his glory. So my life has only been enriched by the greater awareness I have of the universe that he created to declare his glory.
Yeah, I agree. I'm right there too. I mean, staring at the night sky, and my dad loved outer space. And so even from when I was a little girl, he and my mom would take us out to see the aurora borealis. One of the last like sweet times I had with my dad before he passed away was we were sitting out on my back deck, and at this point he wasn't thinking as well, he wasn't seeing as well, but we're just sitting out there on the back deck, my husband, myself, my mom, and my dad. And my dad, out of nowhere, he says, "There's a meteorite shower tonight." And I was like, "Wait, what?" Like, I had no idea. And so we're looking at the sky, and sure enough, these bright meteorites just start streaking the sky, and he could see them, which was amazing. And so we called our kids back up out of bed, and it was three generations just staring up, watching this, like this sweet gift from God before my dad passed. And also just like one of those moments that you're watching it, you're like, there is a creator, and he is so big and we are so small, and yet he cares for us.
What a treasure. I'm sorry you lost your dad.
Thank you. Likewise. I read your newest book, and
yeah,
likewise.
My dad 2 years ago went to be with Christ, and I have a sweet similar memory to that with what you're describing. And I'm just so thankful for those little things, because now every time you get to bring your kids out and see, watch that happening, it's like a reconnection.
Totally. It's a gift. Absolutely. Well, I want to read one of my favorite psalms that mentions space, and it's Psalm 8, verses 3 to 4. It says, "When I consider your heavens, the work of your fingers, the moon and the stars, which you have set in place. What is mankind that you are mindful of them? Human beings, that you can care for them." And that's just what we were talking about. And so, Levi, what has the moon taught you about how big God is and how much he cares about us?
Well, the verse you just read is says fingers. And I know that's what our English word is. But the actual Hebrew is more specific. It's fingertips. In Hebrew, it's the end of the fingers. Like, if you use all your fingers to carry something, that's still pretty impressive that you can carry it around. But if it's something you can grab with your fingertips, it means it's really little to you. So I like to say, when it says God moves and manipulates the heavens with his fingertips, it's like almost like the way you or I would use Legos or marbles. It's like, it's not a big deal. Like, I'm not straining to do that. So to me, the thought of like how far away Mars is and the moon and its rotation and, you know, and the fact that our solar system, which is so big to us, and we're impressed that, you know, humans got to go 240,000 miles away to the moon. That's nothing compared to the size of our solar system or of the Milky Way galaxy or of the millions of unknown quantity of galaxies that exist. And God says he measures it all with the span of his hand. It is like, to me, it's just awe. I feel awe, which studies show that the more you experience awe, the more you'll feel generous, the more you'll feel creative, and the better you'll have at empathy.
Thank you for sharing that. Levi, I just have some fun questions. I can't even imagine, as I was reading both of your books about the moon, I was just wondering, like, how much time did this guy spend researching these? Because you just bring out fact after fact after fact. And so I'm sure at times your imagination went different places. And so I'm curious, would you rather walk on the moon? If you could only choose one, would you rather walk on the moon, orbit the Earth, or visit the International Space Station, and why?
I would want to go to the moon and walk on it. I mean, you can't compare. Orbiting the world would be great, but you're not far. You're just above the Kármán line. Like these, you know, Blue Origin or, you know, Virgin Atlantic moon like flights, you're just going to the Kármán line. You know what I mean? You're technically in space, and it would still be epic to be in a blast off. The space station is awesome too, but you're still only 355 miles up there. So when we talk about going to the moon, we're talking about going to the space station and then going another 247,600 miles further. It's a quarter million miles away. That's far. I mean, it takes days to get there. And so getting to go to the moon and the perspective of getting to see the Earth backwards, I mean, when you go to the moon, the Earth at times will be a crescent. And to get to see the Earth as a crescent Earth compared to where you normally are used to seeing a crescent moon, and to look back, that would be, one of the astronauts put it this way. He said, when you're on the moon, you can use your thumb to block out the Earth the way that we could look up with our thumb and block out the moon. And I think that would give you such a sense of perspective. But I will tell you this. I interviewed another astronaut, and he said to me, I said, did going to the moon change your life? And he said, no, Jesus Christ changed my life, but going to the moon was cool. So as amazing as the experience would be, it's nothing, he said, compared to knowing Jesus Christ.
Amen. So true, to know the one who put the moon in place and all of its, everything that it controls, everything that holds together in the universe, like to know the one that actually did that, like you said, with his fingertips, just incredible. If you could pack one snack for a trip to the moon, what would it be?
Wow, that's a good question. Well, since communion's already taken, I guess I would have to bring Joyride. You know, Ryan Trahan, he's got this candy Joyride. It's like a low sugar candy.
Okay.
His mission is to get it in every store in the world. I would probably bring Joyride because that would be pretty epic to bring that to the moon.
I've never even heard about that. I'm going to have to look that up, maybe get some for my kids.
It's like low sugar. He doesn't want it to be like full of like stuff that's bad for you. You know, he's a YouTuber.
Okay. I prefer salty over sweet. I think I would bring popcorn because it'd be fun to like see it floating around, although that's probably not good for the ship.
For the cockpit? No, it's the exact opposite of what you want. They want to avoid that. And you could choke on it. If you're flying around and there's particulate in the air, you could end up accidentally ingesting it.
I'm going to need to rethink what I'm packing for space.
No popcorn for space. Popcorn. You could liquefy it, though, and have like popcorn mush.
I think I'll pass. All right, Levi, the next time the kids look up at the moon, what do you hope that they remember?
That the one who hung it is always there for them. And that's what, as a family, we have a little tradition. Whenever we see the moon, we always pretend like we grab it and we eat it. And it's almost like this little, we pretend, it's just a reminder. It's an inside joke reminder for us. Like God's got this. He's with us. We're good.
Hmm. That's so good. I'm going to think of that now when I see the moon.
Grab it and eat it.
Yeah. In Marvel at the Moon, you share how you shared this earlier, how there's a Bible on the moon. And was it astronaut Dave Scott, I think, left it there
that
in 1971? Right. Later in the book, you ask the question, if you could choose just one thing to leave on the moon for future missions to find, what would it be? So I'm curious, you can't choose the Bible. What would you leave on the moon?
You know, I think, Armstrong had a daughter named Karen who died. And he took a picture of her up there. And I think I would probably bring something of Linnea's. We had a little girl who died, who went to be with Jesus when she was 5. And I think I would probably want to find something of Linnea's or a photo of Linnea's or maybe one of Linnea. We have a lot of her art. She would do art. I would probably take something of hers up there to the moon with me.
That's beautiful. Thank you for sharing that. Levi, to close, I would love to ask you to read my very favorite devotion from Marvel at the Moon, and that is number 15. Could you read that for us?
I would be so happy to. Number 15 is called Up Above It All. If any of you needs wisdom, you should ask God for it. God is generous. He enjoys giving to all people, so God will give you wisdom. James 1:5. Sunrises, we see those every morning. Moonrises, we can see those most every night if it's not too cloudy. But what about an earthrise? Only a few people have ever seen one of those. What is an earthrise? It's when it looks like the earth is rising up over the moon. Why have only a few people ever seen one? Because you have to be standing on the moon to be in orbit around it to see this event happen. The first people to see an earthrise with their own eyes were the astronauts of Apollo 8, Jim Lovell, Frank Borman, and Bill Anders. On Christmas Eve of 1968, they snapped the legendary picture now called Earthrise. This picture shows the Earth as a brilliant swirl of blue oceans and white clouds. You can see glimpses of brown and green jungles, forests, and land. The Earth itself seems to hang like a jewel in the velvety black nothingness of space. Astronauts can see an Earthrise because they're up above it all in space. They have a different view and can see more than we can. That's a little like God. Down here on Earth, we can only see what's right around us. So when things go wrong, it's easy to see only the problems and not the answers. We can feel trapped in a maze of troubles and left on our own to find our way out. But God is up above it all. And at the same time, He's right here with us. He's God. He can do amazing stuff like that. Because He sees more than we can see, God can see the perfect way out. So ask Him to help you know what to do. He'll happily help you. And then the prayer. Lord, when I don't know what to do, help me to remember to ask You. Amen. And then the sidebar says, did you know? And this comes back to what we talked about earlier. That same Christmas Eve, the astronauts sent a television broadcast back to Earth. Their message began at the very beginning. In the beginning, God created the heaven and the earth. Genesis 1:1. Taking turns, they read Genesis 1:1 through 10. That night, about a billion people all around the world heard the story of creation. You can listen too. Just ask your mom or dad to search for Apollo 8 Christmas broadcast on YouTube.
Thank you. After I read that, because I think you talked about that in Last Supper on the Moon as well, and after I read it, I went and I found that broadcast, and I was crying. It is so beautiful to think about that being just proclaimed from space, like out over the earth. How amazing.
Yeah, right? And the devil hated it, and of course, that embroiled the lawsuit, and It's fascinating.
It is. Thank you for reading that. Did you do an audiobook for Marvel at the Moon?
I did, and I read it myself. So
I was going to say, as you were reading that, I hadn't heard it. I was like, if you have it, you should totally do an audiobook.
And do you know what's really special about that? I brought my kids into the audio studio. So I did the devotionals. So like the main block of text would be me, right?
Yeah.
But my daughter, Olivia, read all the Did You Knows. So she read the sidebars, and then my youngest, Lennox, did the title. So he would say, he was at the time only five, but he would say, number 19, Trailblazers. Then Clover read all the verses. She's 14, but she was 10 back then. And then Daisy would do the prayers. So you'll hear our whole, and it was really sweet because they got to come in and be a part of it with me.
That is so precious. I had no idea. Thank you for sharing that. So listeners, you need to go get the audiobook, but then you have to actually like get the physical book and read it, because something I really enjoyed was you hide telescopes throughout the illustrations. And I was like a little kid, like going through, and I would circle all of the telescopes as I found them. So I think you need the audiobook and the physical book.
Oh, well, that's fun. Yeah, it was really cool because, first of all, shout out to Catherine Pearson, our illustrator. She did a tremendous job. She also did Roar Like a Lion, my first book, and the Roar cover. But we had hid anchors throughout Roar. And so you have to find all the anchors. And I used to love Highlights magazine, having to find different things. And so we thought, man, it'd be so fun. And yeah, to hide the telescopes through this one was really a fun challenge. And my kids helped me pick where we could hide them. And then Catherine would draw them and we would, you know, tweak the designs. It was really fun.
That is so fun. It's great knowing a little behind the scenes in the process of the book. And it just turned out beautifully. So thank you. Thank you for the work that you're doing. Thank you for following your God-given curiosity. Like, just that you were interested in the moon and it led to this incredible work of sharing the gospel with so many families.
Oh, you're so sweet. Thank you for having me. And I would say, if there's anyone listening who's a homeschooled family, we're a homeschool family. We put together curriculum that's on my website, levilesko.com. Anybody who wants to know how they can use Marvel or Last Supper in homeschooling, we have that there.
Tina, I did not know that. And we're a homeschooling family. We have a lot of homeschoolers tuning in. So I will share those links in the show notes for that curriculum along with Marvel at the Moon and The Last Supper on the Moon. Levi, thank you for joining us today.
Thanks for having me. It was a huge honor.
Well, I know one thing. I am not bringing popcorn to space. I'm curious what snack you kids would choose to bring to space. Have you ever thought about that? Levi gave us a lot to think about today. And do you know what stood out to me? He told us the one who hung the moon is always there for us. Listener, I hope you never forget that. In good times and hard times, our Creator God, who made the marvelous moon and everything in space and on Earth, is there for you. Make sure you grab a copy of Levi's devotional for families called Marvel at the Moon at the link in our show notes. I've read the entire book, and I cannot recommend it more. It is full of fascinating moon marvels and rooted in biblical truth. I hope you enjoyed this special guest episode. Please take a moment to send it to a friend and subscribe, rate, and review Nat Theo wherever you listen. Until next time, keep exploring God's wild and wonderful world and universe. We are all alone.